let's talk about those things a little bit. That, mm-hmm. that you talked about drawings that you extract from your own head, mm-hmm. things that you're drawing from the outside. Mm-hmm. When we were in the gallery the other day, you were talking about drawing those rusted girders and the trestles, and knowing that your translation of what you were seeing into a two-dimensional space was all coming out of what you described as your own aesthetic and educational location in yeah. modernism. Talking about your modernist training, that mm-hmm. sense and that sense of abstraction in its earliest definition as being a translation of a real object, the confusion that occurs sometimes between non-objective and the abstract. So let's talk a little bit about that sense of the location between sure. the mental, what mm-hmm. you see, the sort of purely non-objective, but mm-hmm. and how that comes.
The drawings aren't pictures of the trestles. They're like the trestles. They're abstractions of and interpretations and sort of a musical riff on the trestles. They're abstract pictures. They're pictures of abstractions. I mean, I don't think I can historically make an abstract picture now, but I can make a picture of an abstract picture, and I think that's what I'm doing. I don't know if that makes any sense. The desire is to begin to reflect my world again. The desire as an artist is to not just be either working out of my own private Idaho or to some grand international art magazine, to be somewhat more specific about where I live, where I come from, who my parents were, to be kind of responsibly individual.
This is sort of a key and a core issue because, I mean, if you're making pictures of abstractions, which gives you removed again from another yeah. realm of reality, and so how does one make the local? I mean, there's this sense that images are here and they're so strong, and the art world is so strong as an image, right, that you somehow get involved in that rather than the notion of place and self. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And I would venture to say that's probably more difficult in New York in some ways. I mean, the girders to me, you know, have a sense of New York. I mean, I can see 1950s painting, Klein and some of those de Kooning yeah. things. And there's that sooty, gritty, black and white. But then those things become sort of second nature to us in a way that when you make pictures of that, that other element disappears, it seems to me. And mm-hmm. so I do think a problem for artists is how do you locate yourself? Or do you locate yourself in the art world or in a place? Mm-hmm. I mean, where is the art world? I mean, mm-hmm. New York, it's a marketplace. And, mm-hmm. and I think in New York, it's even harder because mm-hmm. there's a kind of art world identity as opposed to real identity.
But not if you live there.
Oh, no, I understand that, but there's this kind of pressure about a way you make art, that one makes art today,
yeah.
that's so strong that it comes out in a certain way. I mean, I'm all for the radically local and concerned about the sort of globalism in the art world, mm-hmm. which I don't like. And I sense in some way that you're trying to get around that.
I don't know if I'm trying to get around it, but I am trying to get through it. There was a time when I was in Boston that I was in graduate school and I was carving marble and making what I thought were pretty funny jokes about Boston sculpture. But nobody got it because nobody was really interested in Boston sculpture. Yeah. This is a way that registers both regionally and not regionally. So you're right about that. There's a kind of transparency that is a problem with this work. But I work a lot out of town, and I think there's a point at which I'm asking myself, well, what would I take to Richmond that would really make any much difference? And maybe I'm deluding myself, but there's something more interesting about coming here and saying, well, this is what I see about New York art and my neighborhood, than making a statement that's not specific in that way.
Talk a little bit about the idea that you mentioned on Monday that, you know, there's a lot going on outside the Art Forum Club that we think of as sort of the small window of New York / international art. And you said, you know, there's a lot of artists doing a lot of different things, some local, some not so local. So yeah. that, and I think that we might also talk about the way in which, as an art world, we tend to be more homogeneous than we used to be. There's regionalism is long gone, and yet there are lots of different things going on, lots mm-hmm. of different pockets, and maybe that relates in some way mm-hmm. to what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's this issue of scale. The other thing is that's really important here is I grew up in Jersey and was formed by two things, my parents' deli and yearly trips to either the Met, MoMA, or the Whitney. So I got a very sparse but regular diet of modernism through my early years, and not a lot else. And it wasn't like I was going to a really good museum school every Saturday morning. New York, and I'd say specifically Midtown, was iconic for me. And it's only until I moved there that I really grasped the idea of neighborhood, because I just didn't ever move through it in the way that one would learn it. I moved to New York for a variety of reasons, but the biggest one was because of the scale of it. The idea of having that many artists and that many art worlds in one place seemed really interesting to me. That there were a ton of older artists. The variety of it is kind of amazing when you're in it. As upwardly mobile as we all are in the art world, especially now, I think, there seem many more places to sort of land and sustain than one would expect by just reading the magazines. I'm motivated by finding a place like that that's right for my work and balancing that against an adequate amount of visibility that'll allow me to keep a roof over my head.
There was that wonderful slide where you had those mammoth rubber bands on one side of the room, and then you had, I guess, shoelaces or yarn on the other side of the room. And it seemed that there were two very different people there that were in that room, and one was a big, massive, aggressive, high-powered, tough chick. And then there was this other, much more delicate, more delicate. But I see this as a conversation that's going on in that space between part A and part B. And that impressed me. Also, I see it in a very different way with the doppelgangers, where you have the crocheting, at least that one you had with the crocheting, you had the drawing on the wall, and then there was another conversation going on with those. And those I find pretty fascinating. Well, did you take on different personas as you're beginning to develop part A and part B, or did you do
them
a very different
time? No, all those people live under one roof.
Okay. is this a happy roof, or is it a very conflicted roof, as my grandmother would say?
It's fairly happy, but, you know, there are a lot of different parts. We had a really interesting conversation in the gallery the other day about these parts, I think. The doppelgangers in particular, and the conversation you're talking about here, and I think in this recent work in the installation across the way, it's expressed differently, but there's a kind of tolerance of disparate parts or too much information or too much activity. There's a kind of tolerance for discomfort, basically, that's going on here that I like, that I find stretches me beyond what I experience as a parochial thing. So it's experienced as an issue of identity. It's expressed in formal terms and categories of art, but it's experienced for me in terms of having to manage different identities in different contexts with different constituents, and a desire to show those parts and how they are and are not linked. For me, the miracle of the doppelgangers was that they were linked by a phenomenon, by light and shadow. But any other way you sliced it, they made no sense.
Now that you have shoelaces in the work, and shoelaces are essentially found objects, so now you've put found objects into the work. After you did that, is there some interest in doing more of that, where other objects find themselves in this weaving that now gets to be a more complex narrative because there's some other found objects?
Yeah, I think at the moment the complexity that I'm looking for is visual. And perhaps in terms of dealing with space dynamically. What I'm interested in is playing out these issues along the lines of early to mid-20th century modernism, because I find that that is a way that will coalesce the variety for the moment. And I think I have a need to coalesce the variety.
In fact, it's interesting. I remember at one point I saw Picasso. It was sort of a figure, but it was linear, and it was incredibly complex, and I loved this work, so I thought I would draw it. And so I started drawing, and I realized the space was so complex, I couldn't draw it. I could not draw it. And then I go into your exhibition, and there's a complexity of the space that you develop with lines, as he's developed in a very different kind of line, of course, but it's the same kind of complexity of space where you can't rationally understand what's happening within the...
I want to say one more thing about the ready-made.
Okay.
The little objects are made from ready-made. There are ready-mades that have cropped up in the work all along, but they were often found, and it was all about an economy, like literally, like cheap. There's a potential that ready-made work becomes about going shopping, and I'm not about going shopping. So it's a delicate balance in terms of using enough ready-made material to orient oneself in a post-ready-made world.
There's no such thing.
Well, you know, at least acknowledging that ready-madeness is an entity in our world, and then doing it in such a way that it's still fairly economical, and that's another kind of local.
Yeah.
I mean, my neighborhood's a neighborhood of low cost. There's a class thing about this neighborhood that's really carefully constructed.
I actually would like for you to talk a little bit more about that idea of class, which comes up in your work. I mean, there is a humility and an accessibility in the materials, and the way you construct them, there's a kind of ragged and tattered look about it. And there's also, it seems to me, a kind of sense of dominion versus subversion that appears in the tension between the physical forms themselves and the shadows and the reflections. And I'd like for you to expand on that idea of class.
Well, my mother raised me to be a good assimilationist and upwardly mobile. That's the dream. That's the American dream. And I'm with that, but my sense of prosperity is kind of small. I want to convey where I come from, which is, you know, work ethic, and it's about experience. And I think to start with, a lot of the work was organized as ephemeral installation so that there wouldn't be a commodity involved. And since then, I've learned that doesn't make any sense because people will buy it anyway. And I'm okay with that. You know, I don't want to embrace my downward mobility too much because it is there and I have to keep it in check. But I hope it's about disclosing a certain set of values about work, about a kind of invention and imagination, and it's the same along the same line as mastering material. Mastering material is great, but it doesn't do everything. So the other thing is it just lets me work. You know, the way this is situated, where every piece is cannibalized for the next piece, and then chunks are taken out and made for sale or for this or for that, and it's like a big sourdough pot. It lets me work a lot. You know, it lets me do 3 or 4 installations and you're constantly expanding and changing the space, and there's loss along the way. And
I have a question that actually came the other day from you, Myron, and your comment, Sheila, about making the marble sculptures made me think about this. So your mother, Josephine, taught you to crochet when you were how old?
9 or 10, probably.
Myron asked the other day, and I think it's a great question, when did the crocheting come back into the work, and when did it make its conscious appearance as a sort of a locality, you know, that idea of the lamp? And
I think there were some objects made for doppelgangers. Actually, I know there were some. There were some in the Gothic exhibition that had a little bit of crocheting on them.
Okay, right.
Actually, at the very same time, I was crocheting blue masses of Woolworth's yarn and looking at them as similar to the projection drawings and calling them projection fields. 95 was a show that I had at Simmons College, and there was a big mass of inarticulate sort of hanging of blue yarn, different kinds of blue yarn that when I squinted looked pretty much like the photogram drawing.
Crocheting reemerged actually as part of that aesthetic locality, that formal locale for you, rather than as a domestic locale.
Yeah. Even then, I was aware there was a preferencing the domestic, and I was dealing with it in terms of scale and activity. You know, there weren't any serious tools being used. Everything was like cooking, or like plaster's kind of like cooking, or shoving little wires and things, or I think the most high art I got was gold leafing a thing or two.
You said you were at Haystack.
Yeah.
That's a craft thing.
Yeah.
It's not, when was that? Is your background up until then in craft, and then you moved in?
Yeah. I went to Albertus and graduated in 81, and then I transferred to Mass Art and got a BFA in ceramics in 83. Went to Haystack in 84. Then there's like a big chunk of time when I go off and work in museums and consider conservation, and then I consider being a curator, and then I know that I wouldn't be happy unless I tried it myself. And I have to say, in museum work, everything's an object. Everything is about a kind of a craft, especially through the eyes of a conservator, which was like a wonderful leveler for me. There you are in storage, and the bronzes are here, and the ceramics are here, and the paintings are here. And
yeah.
So to get an MFA, I go back to the museum school in 92 mm-hmm. and go to Skowhegan in 94. So okay. 84 at Haystack and 94 yeah. at Skowhegan.
Okay.
I think that might answer it, mm-hmm. yeah.